Brother Sam, I appreciate this opportunity. It's almost like a homecoming for me, having been a student here from 1975 to 1979, graduated in the spring, and also found a lady here who got her MRS degree from this university. She became my wife. She actually is also a graduate here from the education school, actually teaching first grade. That's why she's not here this morning. She is at work. Somebody has to work while somebody else has to play, so to speak. But it's a real pleasure for me to be able to be here. This is one of the easiest lectures, I guess, I've ever had to get up, except for how to learn how to make a PowerPoint presentation, because this is not my forte. And it took me 3 days to do what you're about to see in about 35, 40 minutes. I'm no historian by any means. I guess my kids would say I am a living fossil who has not yet found his grave yet. In view of the fact that what I'm going to show you is my family line. I am very, very familiar with two of the gentlemen that I'm going to speak about. Two of them who are older than the two I will give you some information about, I had to do research on. But they're all centered around a man by the name of Franklin Kemp. Franklin Kemp, I call him Uncle Franklin, so when I use that term, you'll know who I'm referring to. It's about this time of day, at this lectureship, the 8:30 session in Lloyd Auditorium, Franklin Kemp would be speaking for an hour. I don't know how many of you ever attended that, but this was the time frame in which he would be on the other side of this campus delivering messages from the Bible. Stay with Brother William Woodson when the lectureship was going on here, and they would stay up about half the night. As a matter of fact, Uncle Franklin would usually say, says, "I'm losing my voice because we're staying up too late." By the time you got to Thursday and Friday, you could almost, you know, not talk. But what I want to do is to show you the fact that there is a line of preachers. I don't know of all of you who are here, but I have been blessed to be a line of a long line of gospel preachers. I didn't realize that when I was here as a student or before I really began to realize my family lineage, but it goes back six generations. Currently, right now, it's six generations. I say currently. I will not show you every preacher that's in this line because it sort of branches out, some through marriage even. But this is my line, so to speak. The first one is called William Joseph or Joe Kemp. They called him Old Joe Kemp in Hopeful and in Mumford, Alabama. He was born in 1847 and he died in 1934. He is one who came out of the Baptist faith. As a matter of fact, I am told that his father was a Baptist preacher in Hopeful. His name is John Clark Kemp. He died in 1872. I'll tell you why that date is so very important, 1872, as we go into the slides. Now, Joe Kemp had a son. Matter of fact, he had six sons, but one of his sons' name is Benjamin Franklin Kemp. They called him Frank. My father called him Granddaddy Kemp. And this is Franklin Kemp's father. The next in the line is Joseph Franklin Kemp. He is called by his middle name, Franklin Kemp. Franklin Kemp was born in 1915. He died in 1991. I was very familiar with him, as many of you were, for he was alive while I'm still alive. He, matter of fact, was one of my teachers in graduate school after I graduated here in 1979. But Benjamin Franklin Kemp, or Frank Kemp, was born in 1876, and he died in 1941. He died the year World War II really began for this country. And then, of course, there's myself. I was born in 1957. Notice the dash, and there is no death date. It might be today, for that matter. But I was born in 57. So I was not born when the first two were dead, but I was alive when Uncle Franklin was alive. And, of course, the one before me is my dad, James Winford Clark. I'm junior, but they call me Jimmy. And Dad was born in 23, and he died on August the 11th, 1997. Now, also along the same generational line, fifth generation, is a first cousin of mine. His name is Jeff. He currently preaches for the Waco Church of Christ in Waco, Georgia. But he preached for the Mumford Church of Christ in Mumford, Alabama, for several years. The sixth generation is Shane. He was born in 1977. Shane is right here in this audience. Matter of fact, he's right here. Raise your hand, Shane, so everybody knows you are. Okay, now you put it down. But he is the sixth generation. As a matter of fact, My children are sixth generation. I have two sons, as was mentioned. They've done some preaching, but they don't want to go into full-time preaching work. I can sort of understand that because that was a time I didn't want to follow two men. One was Franklin Kemp, and the other one was Winfred Clark. I don't know if you are a son of a preacher, but most of the time when I was introduced, particularly when I first started preaching, I was always the son of Winfred Clark. That's how they introduced me. And sometimes if they knew Franklin Kemp, I'd be introduced as the great nephew of Franklin Kemp. Now, if you've ever stood in the shadows of preachers who the whole brotherhood knew, you don't know what that feels like. But I do. I certainly do. And there's a sense in which you want your own identity. I didn't appreciate it then like I do now because of the heritage that I have. But these are the lines. And basically, I'm going to deal with the first four. I'm going to sort of tell their story. I'm not going to bore you with home videos of my life. And I'm not going to tell you a lot about those that are still living. They're still alive. You can ask them. But the fact of the matter is, my heritage is tied to the Bible. And it's because these four men right here believed the Bible was the Word of God more than anything. Matter of fact, they dedicated their entire lives to do nothing but to preach the simple New Testament Christianity that you and I are part of in Churches of Christ. Now, this is a picture that I was given. This is Joe Kemp. I don't know how old exactly he was, but this is he and his wife. Given some detailed information, was born in 1847 and died in 1934. He's married in 1866 to Elizabeth Smith. Now, 1866, that's the year after the Civil War was over in 1865. Okay, now she died before he died. She died in 1927, so he was a widower for just a few years before his own death. They had six sons and one daughter. He was the postmaster at Hopeful, Alabama. Now, if you've ever been to what's called Cheehaw Mountain is the highest point in the state of Alabama. This is where all these people, as it were, born, raised, had their families. As a matter of fact, there are still people around that area, though they mainly live in what we'll call the Montford, Alabama area. But he was the postmaster. He also became, as it were, when he moved to Montford, he also was the postmaster at Montford. Oddly enough, when my dad's dad died on the Clark side, my grandmother became the postmaster at Montford. So it's almost like it just stayed in the family there. That's what I remember from my childhood memories, is Grandmama Clark being at the post office. And when we go to visit her, she had to be there until they shut the post office down. But this is an old picture. This would be somewhere probably in the early, maybe 1920s, before his death in 1934. This is an earlier picture. This is in Hopeful, Alabama. And that's one of the fine mansions you'll find in Hopeful, Alabama. You'll find that this is just an old board building, and this is not all the family, but this is a good bit of the family. Actually, Scott gave me this picture over the internet. I did not have access to this picture. I'm glad he gave it to me. And several people in this photograph that are very, very important to this story or to this account. One is, that is Joe Kemp right there in the middle. He is, as it were, the patriarch of this family and all of his family members around him. This is Frank Kemp. This is Benjamin Franklin Kemp. That's Joe's boy. That's Franklin Kemp's father. Franklin Kemp's father. This is Franklin Kemp's grandfather, Joe. This is Franklin Kemp's father. That's Franklin Kemp's mother. Her name is Sudie. Sudie, S-U-D-I-E. In Sudie's lap is Aura Kemp. She will later marry Raymond Clark. That is my grandmother when she was an infant. Okay? Now, this little girl right here on the far right of this picture, her name is Minnie, M-I-N-N-I, like Minnie Mouse. She's Minnie Kemp. She married a Cole. Much of what I'm going to tell you came from accounts of this lady right here, who's a member of the church, and also a Mr. Parnell, and also a Lackey. Those were household names. As a matter of fact, they're still household names in the Montford, Talladega County, Alabama area. But she was an eyewitness of this man, Joe Kemp. And I have a written record right here with me. I think I left it in the automobile out in the parking lot. But it gives her own written account of the Hopeful congregation, the start of it, and also the moving then to the Montford congregation in Montford, Alabama. But this is a very historical picture as far as that camp family line is concerned. I found this about 3 or 4 weeks ago in preparation for this PowerPoint presentation. I went to the Talladega City Library, got on their computer, Ancestry.com, the library version. And I just typed in William Joseph Camp, see what any information there might be. I'm in Talladega. This is the county in which he was, as it were, born and raised. And I pulled up, and in the 1907 Civil War soldier records, voila, William Joseph Camp, Joe Camp. Now, his record is down here at the bottom. This is the close-up entry of it. I want you to note something about this because I was shocked when I saw this. His present post office address was Munford, Alabama, July 29th of 1846. It's said to be his birth. That's sort of not exactly correct, as I'll show you the marker on his tombstone in a minute. He was born in Campbell County, Georgia. There is no such thing as Campbell County, Georgia. That county now has been absorbed into three counties in Georgia. As a matter of fact, Carroll County and some over toward the city of Atlanta. So it's close to the city of Atlanta on the western side. From Talladega, Alabama, he was a private on April of 1864. Now that's good and close to the end of the Civil War. 1865 is the end of the war. So he was in Talladega, Alabama. He was enlisted then in Company F in the Marine Corps. But then here is the important thing about this whole document. He continued until he was paroled. Now, from what I understand, and you may correct me if you're a Civil War historian, at the end of the Civil War, instead of the Southern soldiers, as it were, being jailed for rebellion, the country basically said, as long as you don't bear arms against the country again, we will parole you. And that was the nature of how it worked. So all these Civil War soldiers in the South who basically fought against the Union were paroled. And you were paroled at many different places. If I go back to this other, this man right here was paroled in Talladega, Alabama. This man down here was paroled in Richmond, Virginia. See, there's many different cities you were paroled. But go back to Granddaddy Camp. He was paroled April the 9th, 1865. Now, I don't know if you're a Civil War buff, but April 9, 1865 is the day Lee surrendered to Grant at Appomattox Courthouse, Virginia. The day. Now, I don't know if this is pure coincidence or if this is a piece of information, but Joe Camp was paroled the very day at the courthouse in Virginia when Lee surrendered to Grant. 1865. Now, this is a year before he married Elizabeth Smith. Okay. By the way, he's not a Christian yet. I'm glad he didn't die, to be honest with you, because the fact of the matter is, this is my family line. But here is an individual, when you go back and look at Civil War history, matter of fact, trace your information. This fits as far as what I found. This is not a Camp, this is not a Clark, but this is a very important man in my family line. His name is James M. Joyner. I've heard Brother Wayne Kilpatrick talk about Brother Joyner. The Joyner did a lot of work in the state of Alabama. As a matter of fact, Brother Joyner's father also, from what I understand, was a preacher. As a matter of fact, they were of the Baptist faith, I believe, if that be correct. Wayne said yes. I use him as a reference because I think he's pretty knowledgeable about this stuff. But Brother Joyner obeyed the gospel, and then around 1870 started, as they say, according to the records that I found, he went everywhere preaching the word. In 1877, James Joyner got off the L&N Railroad at Ironton. Now, Ironton is just a railroad stop outside of Talladega, Alabama. He asked the question, is there anybody here in the area who is part of what's known as Churches of Christ? Word was told him that they thought that there was a family in Hopeful who were of that persuasion. His name was Edley Lackey. Edley Lackey. James Joyner went to Edley Lackey's home, and there he preached in that man's house. Among the attendees in Edley Lackey's house when James Joyner preached was Joe Camp, William Joseph Camp. Now, William Joseph Camp at that time was a Baptist preacher. Hopeful did not have but one meeting house. The Methodist used it in the morning. The Baptist used it in the afternoon, the one meeting house on the first day of the week. They wouldn't let Brother Joyner use the meeting house. So he went to Eddie Lackey's and he preached there. Joe Camp was there. When Joe Camp left, he went down the street and there was a man who was a relative of his, and he walked into his uncle's house, and his uncle asked him, what did he think about that Camelot preacher? Joe Camp's statement was, now listen, he was a Baptist preacher at this point. He says, if he's a Camelot, that's what I am too. That's what he said. Now, he wasn't converted yet, but he heard and he said, according to many Camp Cole's report, that's the first original gospel sermon I ever heard in my life. Brother James Joyner preaching in 1877 in the home of Edley Lackey, and he simply heard him there that particular day. Now, in 1878, I've got this date here, he came to Hopeful, Alabama. As a matter of fact, Brother Joyner did a lot of tours on horseback. For over 50 years, Brother Joyner would ride horseback up and down, even into Middle Tennessee. Did a lot of work up at the Rocky Springs Church of Christ outside of Bridgeport, Alabama. When Brother Joyner came down, as it were, into the area where he met his wife, Janie Holder, and the Holders were members of the church, and it was through the Holder family that James Joyner obeyed the gospel. Lived over in Clay County, worked a lot around Clay, Randolph County in Alabama. So he came across the mountain. Clay County's on the east side of Cheehaw. He came across the mountain to Talladega County. They asked him if he would conduct a gospel meeting in 1878 in the Hopeful community. At that time, the Baptist and the Methodist were fighting over the use of the building. So there was a squabble already between the two. They wouldn't let, again, Brother Holder use the building. And so he basically preached in a person's home there in the community. The very first person to obey the gospel is this lady whose tombstone you see right here. Her name is Sarah Abercrombie. She was a Camp. That is Joe Camp's mother. Now you have to understand, she's a preacher's wife, a Baptist preacher's wife. Her husband died in 1872. Brother Holder held a meeting in 1878. 6 years she's been a widow. Okay, she never remarried, but she's the first convert of Brother Holder's meeting. First sermon Brother Holder preached in the meeting, Sarah Abercrombie Camp obeyed the gospel. The very next service, Joe Camp obeys the gospel. Brother Holder was asked to conduct that meeting, probably lasted 2 weeks. It's nothing uncommon at that time to have two-week gospel meetings. Brother Holder, through the effort of that meeting, converted every family of the Baptist faith but one. Every family but one in that one gospel meeting. So now Joe Camp becomes the gospel preacher. And in view of the fact that he was a part of the Baptist faith, and basically now the Baptist faith has dwindled down to one family in that community. So you've got the church now established and Hopeful. The story goes that what they call Old Joe, when young children were asked to read their Bible and to study their Bible, they'd ask kids to get up and recite verses of the Bible, and those kids would just repeat those verses. Said Joe Camp wept with tears when he saw those young children repeating verses from the Bible. Another thing about Joe Camp is this. Whenever he would preach, they'd read a verse of Scripture, and then he'd ask the question, now what does that mean? Generally, someone would try to give an interpretation. He says, read it again. Someone again would read the same verse again. He'd say, that's what it meant. In other words, the Bible means exactly what it says. Don't try to give any interpretation to it. It means exactly what you just read. Like Mark 16:16. You don't interpret that. You just believe it and you do it. Now that is the mentality of great, great granddaddy Camp. That's how he came out of denominationalism. All you do is show me the verse. I believe it's the Word of God. That's all I have to have. And he gives up everything he had a part of in the Baptist faith and obeys the gospel. But this is his mother's grave. That grave is in Hopeful, still at the face of Cheehaw Mountain. This is the old building in Hopeful. This is a picture that I was sent by email. And I'm told that there are 11 different Camp members of the family in that particular picture. This is around the turn of the century, around 1900. This is an actual photograph of that same building. I don't know exactly the date of this building. The building, by the way, no longer exists. If you came into that area, that building is gone. The cemetery is there in that community, but the building is gone. If I'm not mistaken, that right there is Joe Camp. That looks like him. It fits the profile. It fits the bill, the type, and also the hat. I saw the hat. I said, that's got to be great-granddaddy Camp right there. But I remember my father. I remember Uncle Franklin talking about the old hopeful congregation and how that this is where the Muntford congregation actually came out of. This is Joe Camp on the very end right here. How y'all like that necktie? That was styling, as we say, back in that time. And these are his six sons. The daughter's not found in that photograph. But this is his son, Nathan. Nathan and this man right here, this is Frank. That's Franklin Camp's father. They both moved to Muntford. Matter of fact, Uncle Nathan basically owned the cotton mill in Muntford. And they became co-owners in that. And out of these six, all of them were obeyed the gospel. And Old Joe, or Granddaddy Camp is what I call him, he was the gospel preacher. Now, this is the man that is one of the most influential people that I heard Uncle Franklin talk about. When Uncle Franklin would talk about people in his family line, he didn't talk so much about his grandfather as much as he talked about his dad. And I'll give you some accounts of that. This is Joe Camp's grave in the Muntford Cemetery. I took this a couple of weeks ago. It's an obelisk. And it's just got the Camp family name there. And on the side of it, W.J. Camp, born July 28, 1847, died February 22, 1934. Don't know what he died with. If you know, let me know. I need to give a medical history the next time I have a family situation. But this is his grave. This is a picture of the Muntford Cemetery. His grave is right here at the base of this old oak tree. It shows you that's not perpetual care, by the way, in that cemetery. That is, you take care of it yourself if you're going to. This is actually the grave of my grandparents. This is my dad and mother's grave right there. This is Joe Camp's granddaughter's grave. I explain that because she's a very, very important person in the preacher line of the Clark side that came out of the Camp family. This is a picture that I was given by email of Benjamin Franklin Camp. This is Franklin Camp's dad. They called him Frank. A photo probably taken around the year 1910. Because he was a young man at this time. He died in 1941. It indicates the fact that probably in the mid-30s this picture was taken, according to the next photograph. This is a photograph that Scott sent me through the email that I'd never seen before in my life. And when I saw it, Scott, I leaped up off the ground. This is a picture of what was then someone taking a picture of what's called Alabama preachers. This would be around the turn of the century, maybe the 1920s, maybe 1930s. The listing of these names up here, John T. Lewis, that's John T. Lewis. Brother Lewis preached in the Birmingham area for decades. As a matter of fact, he made folks mad with his preaching. One of the things I learned about him was that he made the statement, I'd rather make you mad now than in the day of judgment you tell me why didn't you teach me about Jesus, than simply let you go on and us be friends, and then the day of judgment you ask me why didn't you teach me about Jesus. So Brother Lewis was the kind of man that did what I call distinctive preaching. And it's my conversion that you, in my persuasion, you got to do that. Not make folks mad to be making folks mad, but show the truth in spite of the facts. This is Talbert, and this is not Talbert, this is T.B. Larimore from Florence, Alabama. And right beside T.B. Larimore is Franklin Camp's dad. Let me tell you something about this particular man. Uncle Franklin one time said they went on a trip to David Lipscomb College at the time. It's David Lipscomb University. Brother Pulius was the president then. And Uncle Franklin said that after he had talked with his dad, this man right here, Benjamin Franklin Camp, Brother Pulius told Uncle Franklin, your daddy knows more Bible than most of the Bible faculty I got on this campus. Now, the thing about this man right here is, never went to a preaching school, never went to a Christian college. He's self-taught. All he did was take his Bible, and he read it, 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 and he preached it. That's all he ever did. There is in my family, I don't know if it still exists, this man's own personal study Bible. He wrote in the margins of his Bible. I call it the Holy Grail of the Camp family. Franklin Camp told my daddy That's where he got a lot of information on his studies in the book of Romans, was out of his daddy's Bible, the margins out of his Bible. My daddy laid his eyes on that Bible at one time. My daddy saw that. Uncle Franklin would never let him have it. He kept that right there as his own personal copy. When Uncle Franklin died, we don't have a clue. I don't have a clue where that Bible went. It's like it vanished into thin air. I don't want that Bible. I just want the Xerox copies of the pages of the book of Romans. I just want to Xerox the book of Romans in his Bible, because all his notes on the book of Romans are in that copy, in that personal Bible. I don't know if you write in your Bible, but he did. He underlined. He made notations and so forth. But all of these were preachers that were well known in that particular era. This is Frank. In his latter years, actually it goes back to that photo, probably about 1930. And this is his wife, Sudie. Very interesting thing about him, Joe Kemp and Frank Kemp were both local preachers of the church at Muntford, but they weren't what we call full-time paid preachers. As a matter of fact, Frank Kemp probably didn't take a lot of money, if any, from the congregation at Muntford to preach for several reasons. He farmed 60 acres of land outside of Muntford, for he's a farmer. He also is a part owner of the cotton mill with his brother Nathan there in Muntford. And for that, and because of that, he ran also the general store. Now, there is a story that I'll tell you that Uncle Franklin said about Granddaddy Kemp. Matter of fact, a couple of things. Number one, during the days of the Depression in the 1930s, and Uncle Franklin's dad ran the general store in Muntford. By the way, that's what you call trading with folks. And you had to put things on credit. You had a ledger. You had their name, and you wrote down what they owed you. Uncle Franklin said that there'd be times in where a man would come in and give his grocery list. You know, the wife would send the honey to do the list. And we'd go out, and you'd have so much flour, so much sugar, so much coffee, and so forth, and you'd pile that in the old sack. It says when it got down to the end of the filling of the list, Granddaddy Kemp would just reach over whatever's close to the counter and just grab a big handful of it and stick it in the top of the sack. It's during days of depression now. And the man would always tell Granddaddy Kemp, he said, "Now, Mr. Kemp, I can't pay for that." He said, "This is free of charge. This is for your kids." And he did that for everybody. He says, "You don't owe me anything." He says, "And when you get whatever money you get, whenever your crop comes in, just come in and pay your bill. I know you're good for it." Now, that's story number one. Account number two, I got this from my own father. My father was a very small boy in the city of Muntford, Alabama, the big city, by the way. By the way, that's sarcastic. Henderson looks like Atlanta to Muntford, Alabama. Okay? A charismatic group came in with a tent meeting in Muntford, Alabama, when Granddaddy Kemp was a preacher at Muntford. Also, the proprietor of the general store in Muntford. So everybody traded with him. Everybody knew him. Granddaddy Kemp sat on the back row with my dad. The preacher preached his long spill of his charismatic Pentecostal sermon, and he made the fatal mistake at the end of his lesson by saying, "If there's anybody in this audience that does not think that I have preached the truth, I will sit down and here is the podium." Daddy said, "Granddaddy Kemp, this man right here," actually let me back up, "this man right here, took his coat off, laid it on the back of the chair, walked up to the podium, stood there and preached 30 minutes. The next day, they pulled that tent meeting out of Muntford and it never came back." That's a fact. Everybody knew Frank Kemp. They all traded with him. He was the local preacher at Muntford. They all knew him. And when he got through preaching the Bible, they got out of town. You resist the devil, he'll flee from you. That's exactly what happened. There's a lot of things about this man I wished I had lived to see him. Matter of fact, I wished I was almost living, because Uncle Franklin would go on and on and on about his daddy. And another thing is said about him, it says, "He and Sudie were known for their generous spirit. They gave lodging and meals to many strangers and those in need. If a person went through Muntford, there was no motel in Muntford." I don't know if there's even one there now. It's not one now, Shane says, because Shane lives there. So if you're going to stay in Muntford, you stayed with Frank, Sudie Kemp. They opened up their doors And that's where you stayed. She fed them meals, and they bore them down. This is the house right here. We call this in my family the hill. The hill on Highway 21, Alabama 21, just as you're leaving out of Munford going toward Oxford Anniston. If you look over to the right, there's a house that sits out on a little precipice of a hill. Down the bottom is Salt Creek. And down there likely is that 60 acres of land that Granddaddy Camp used to farm. But this is a home now owned by one of the grandchildren. Her name is Patsy, Larry and Patsy Watts now live there in the old home place. Actually, it doesn't look like that right now. I think last time I was up there, it looked like they've rocked up sort of the porch of it. I want to show you some pictures in just a few minutes about how I think a lot of pictures I'm about to show you were taken standing right there on the hill, right out in the front yard. Pictures of Franklin Camp and even of my dad when he was a boy. But that's the old home place in Munford. This is the immediate family of Frank and Sudie Camp. This is Frank, this is his wife, and these are all their children. As a matter of fact, that's Franklin Camp right there down in the low side. And then this is my grandmother. This is Ora Camp Clark, married to Raymond. And the whole picture behind all of this is that every one of those are Christian. They all were raised under the influence of the church. They were all raised under the influence. And by the way, all of those kids right there, they're all PKs. They're all preacher's kids. Okay? By the way, I'm a preacher's kid and a preacher. Okay? He's a preacher's kid and a preacher. We all understand that concept when it comes to the nature of it. But these are all the family members. This is an old photo, evidently right there outside at the hill. This is Franklin Camp as a young man, and that's his dad. Granddaddy Camp died in Oxford, went to the drugstore, and evidently had a massive heart attack and died right there as he was coming out of the drugstore with his prescription. Uncle Franklin was in the automobile driving him there to the pharmacy. So he had a massive heart attack and died instantly. So that was a very devastating thing to Uncle Franklin. As a matter of fact, Brother Gus Nichols did Granddaddy Camp's funeral. Got to tell you something about Brother Nichols in particular in lieu of that. Granddaddy Camp's wife, Sudie, was very, very tired, exhausted over the whole ordeal with Granddaddy Camp dying so suddenly and so many of the family coming in. They asked Brother Nichols to do the funeral. Somebody walked up to Brother Nichols and said, "Now, Brother Nichols, ain't Sudie's tired? And she'd really appreciate it if you wouldn't preach a real long funeral." And Brother Nichols' comment was, "Who's preaching his funeral?" The funeral lasted an hour and a half. And Brother Nichols even gave the plan of salvation in the funeral. That's how much Brother Nichols trusted and believed in Frank Camp. As a matter of fact, Brother Nichols was the very first gospel meeting preacher when Franklin Camp became the full-time preacher at Munford. Brother Nichols. Gus Nichols was the first preacher to hold the meeting. So the Nichols family was very strong with this family. This is the grave of Frank Camp in the Munford Cemetery. That's his tombstone. Benjamin Franklin died in 1941. This is the man that I lived to talk to, actually got to listen to. This is a younger picture of Franklin Camp. He was born June 9, 1915 in Hopeful, Alabama, that little bitty community. He obeyed the gospel at the age of 14 through the preaching of S.P. Pittman. Began preaching in 1935. It was around 1937 or so that he heard Gus Nichols make the statement in a gospel meeting that I study 5 hours a day. Uncle Franklin made the statement, "If Gus Nichols has to study 5 hours every day, I got to study six." Franklin Camp studied, according to what I know, 6 hours every day of nothing but to prepare himself to be a Christian, to be a gospel preacher. I remember one time as a child going down to spend the night with them. He got up way before the sun came up, and he went to the little church building down at Shades Mountain in Birmingham. Got there at 4 a.m., 4 in the morning. He came back and ate breakfast. He went by there and stayed till 10. And then he would come back, and then we would visit. But he, at 4 a.m., was in that office, and he was going to study until 10. By the way, he took a nap in the afternoon. Most people weren't told that. You get up at 4 a.m., you get sleepy. And by the way, he didn't stay up all night either. He went to bed early, took a nap in the afternoon, but he studied from 4 a.m. to 10. The question was asked, "Why do you do that?" He said, "The telephone don't ring at 4 a.m. like it does at 8, 9, 10, 11 in the morning when the brethren want to talk to you all day long. He says, I got to study if I'm going to preach, because you can't teach what you don't know. I thought about that. Okay, that was his habits. Uncle Franklin was married to Aunt Hazel. We called her Aunt Hazel. She was Hazel Howard. They were married on February the 27th, 1937. Again, I think that's a picture still up at the hill. This is Uncle Franklin and Aunt Hazel as I remember them toward their latter years. They were married for 54 years. This is a photograph here of a picture I took a week and a half ago. This is the Brick Store Church of Christ building outside of Talladega. Matter of fact, there are some gospel preachers I could name their names who preached at this building. Matter of fact, I won't do that, but there's some pretty well-known names in our brotherhood who preached at the Brick Store. Now, the reason I put this picture up here is because that is 7 miles away from Franklin Camp's home when he used to live in Munford. When Uncle Franklin used to preach at the Brick Store, he walked. And the story goes that Uncle Franklin would take his shoes off. He tied them together and he draped them over his shoulders when he would walk to the Brick Store to preach. As soon as he got close to the building, that's when he would then put his shoes back on. He didn't want his shoes to get dirty when he's going to get in the pulpit. So he walked barefooted from home to that building to preach. By the way, that's 7 miles there, and you can walk in 7 miles back to preach one time. 14 miles. 7 of it barefooted. Folks, I never walked 7 miles barefoot in my life. He did that just to preach the gospel. He was a stickler about appearance in the pulpit. He taught my dad a lot about appearance in the pulpit. Uncle Franklin used to teach the fact, when you get in that pulpit, there is a dignity that goes with preaching. There's a dignity about this. And you manifest that when you walk into it, much less when you open your mouth. This is Uncle Franklin and Aunt Hazel and 3 of their 4 children. David's not born yet, according to this photograph. This is the only daughter that they had. In Old Truths with New Robes, Volume 2, there's a chapter in there called 1951. In 1951, this little girl right here in the East Gadsden area, in Gadsden, Alabama, had on Aunt Hazel's old long skirt. And like little girls want to dress up in their mama's clothes. And had an old safety pin, and Aunt Hazel, because it drugged the ground, tucked it up and tied it in with a safety pin. Well, this little girl's name is Vivian, and Vivian was outside playing with matches. The fire caught her dress on fire. She ran around the front of the house. Aunt Hazel saw it from the kitchen, went out to try to get the dress off and couldn't get it off. In 3 days, Vivian died in the hospital, and Uncle Franklin wrote that article, 1951. If you go back and read that, He very vividly could describe that with tears and talking about the accident. She had third-degree burns on her body and lived about 3 days. She died before I was ever born, but I remember him talking about her. When you go through tragedies in life, he said, been there, know exactly what that's like. And I'll tell you in one particular account he gave of this particular situation. He said it wasn't long after Vivian's death in the Birmingham newspaper, there was a lady who'd lost a child to a car accident. And Uncle Franklin said, I didn't have a clue who this person was, but had their address. He says, I sat down with a piece of paper and I wrote a letter to this family explaining that I also had lost a child by an accident. He says, and I sent that letter to that family. He says, I don't know what that did for that family, never heard from that family. He said, let me explain something to you. That letter helped me recover from the loss of my own child. And here was his lesson. He says, if you want to help yourself, help other people. That's how you help yourself. He says, don't sit here and wallow in self-pity about your losses. He says, everybody's got problems, everybody's got losses. He says, when you serve others, you will help yourself. Last sermon he preached at Adamsville, Alabama, that I have on recording, his sermon was, it's better, it's more blessed to give than to receive. He said, that's what this congregation's taught him. Wear yourself out in serving others. Says, you'll find out it's more blessed to give to others than it is to receive. He says it's cathartic. This is the picture of Uncle Franklin I remember the most, him sitting with his Bible open in his office. He was a student of the Bible, a teacher of the Bible, a preacher of several congregations, both in Alabama and Georgia. The one in Georgia, LaGrange, Georgia, that's where I was born when Dad was preaching at Park Avenue. He was a lecturer on many lectureship programs here, David Lipscomb, Faulkner University, or Alabama Christian at that time, and as author of several books. Here are 7 points that Uncle Franklin taught me. There's a lot of things Uncle Franklin taught a lot of people. These are 7 things, real quick. Always fill your lessons and your sermons with the Bible. Here's one of the things he would always mention. It's easy to use personal illustrations when you're preaching because you know more about yourself and your family than anybody else. He says, but every once in a while, he says, you need to remember, if you use an illustration from the Bible, like an Abraham or a Job or so forth, he said, you're still staying in the Bible. You've never left the Bible when you're preaching verses because you're using your illustrations that come out of the Bible. Study first to help yourself, then study to help somebody else. I can't tell you how many times he'd say, study your Bible for yourself. How easy is it for preachers to get up Bible classes and sermon outlines and think I've got to get something because I got deadlines to meet? He said, don't study your Bible that way. Study your Bible for yourself. If it helps you, it'll help somebody else. And this is the one, 3, I heard him say toward the end of his life. Pride will overcome you if you let it. Don't let it happen. Uncle Franklin used to say, every once in a while, people will come up to me and say, Brother Camp, I've learned more from the Bible from you than any person I've ever sat under. He says, every once in a while, you want to believe that. You understand? Every once in a while, you want to believe what they're telling you about you is true. He says, but I know one sin. If I'm going to be lost in day of judgment, the one sin is pride. I heard him say that many times. He says, you cannot let the compliments people give you make you think you're better than sliced bread. He says, the only important person in the church is Christ. The rest of us are servants. In 1980 or 1981, right here at Freed Hardeman, they dedicated the lectureship book to him. Gave him a dinner on Tuesday night. I was there. I heard him say, forget about me. Everything's been said about me. I wish you'd forget about me and remember Christ and follow him. That's the way he lived. That's the way he died. But this 4 is the one he got from his dad. I heard Uncle Franklin say that his daddy told him, if you ever in your study of the Bible come across something I never taught you, but you believe with all your heart in your study that that's true, and there's nobody out here that you've run into who can show you in the Bible, from the Bible, where your conclusion contradicts a verse of the Bible, says you hold on to that and don't you ever let go of it, even though I didn't teach it to you. I don't know if you're familiar with his book on the Holy Spirit, but I'll assure you there are a lot of our brotherhood don't believe what's in that book. But he did that book out of a conviction of his own study. And matter of fact, before he wrote that book, he bounced that off a bunch of preachers at Adamsville. In that preacher's class he taught before he ever put that book out to see how those preachers reacted to that study. I heard my daddy say when he first heard Uncle Franklin discuss the material that went in that book, he said, that has got to be wrong. Got to be wrong. The dad said Uncle Franklin done his homework and he had studied and studied and studied all those verses. He says, and I hadn't like he had. And it takes time to absorb that. 5, don't get caught up in extremes. Don't go into radicalism and don't go into liberalism. Neither go to the right hand or to the left. I tell that to every preacher. Don't ever, ever, ever get caught up in extremes because they're always going to be there. 6, let the love of God through the cross of Christ motivate you in all things. So easy for our brotherhood to use everything under the sun for motivation, but the Bible has its own motivation. And if I be lifted up, will draw all men to me, John 12:32. It's one of the most favorite verses he'd ever quote to talk about. How do you draw people to the church? How do you draw people to obey the gospel? He said, it's the cross. It's not the preacher. It's not your building. It's not your programs. It's the cross and the love of God in that cross. By the way, that's not denominationalism. That's Bible. And the last thing is, he says, preaching always involved 2 things. Dad always told me, Jim, if you're going to preach, there's 2 things you got to do. You got to be sincere in what you're doing, and you got to make it simple. Don't ever preach over anybody's head. Now, if you know Greek, and you say ekklesia and agape and every other Greek word you know, most folks in the pew could care less what you think. But if you just give them the English language they can understand and teach it so the kids can understand it, you adults will get it. That's the way my dad preached. He got that from Uncle Franklin. Because that's the way Uncle Franklin preached. This is the last of the camp family reunions that I attended. They had one recently before that, but that's 1990. The reason I know that's 1990 because that's my little girl right there before she turned 1 year old. She was born in 1990. Franklin Camp died the year after this picture in 1991. That's him, and that's my grandmother. That's his sister, and that's also his sister on either side of him. That's a lot of the camp families right there in that particular picture. It's the grave of Franklin Camp in Mumford Cemetery, and on the middle of the tombstone it says simply, the servant of Jesus Christ. I heard Brother Willard Collins, who was there. Brother Willard Collins and Uncle Franklin were roommates at David Lipscomb College. They called them Nit and Wit because of their practical joke nature. I heard Brother Willard Collins say at Uncle Franklin's funeral after it was over, he says, I don't know what I'm going to do now. He says, I have lost one great friend. I heard Brother Collins make the statement when he spoke here in 1981 or 80 at Uncle Franklin's appreciation dinner. He said, there's a lot of men's telephone numbers I have listed in my Rolodex and in my listing. He says, the number one telephone number at the top of my list is Franklin Camp. Franklin Camp. That's how close they were. From college all the way to the end of Uncle Franklin's life. This is my dad. This is the picture that shows up in the lectureship books more times than not whenever Dad would preach. He was a preacher, he was a teacher, he was a lecturer, author, and also an elder of the church at Hobbs Street where he died. He was also the director of the Alabama School of Bible Institute. Started that in 1985 at the West Hobbs Street congregation. Now meets in 5 different locations. You don't pay any tuition, you don't take any tests, you don't write any papers, you don't get any college credit for it. It's simply like a Tuesday night class at night. Anybody can come. You sit down, you gave out sermon outlines. It originated from the old Gus Nichols Friday night preacher's classes when he handed out the outlines and you simply went through them as Brother Nichols went through. This is my father's mother and dad. This is what they call Doc Clark. He was not a member of the church until my grandmother converted him. But this is Franklin Camp's sister, my grandmother. This is that family picture. This is my dad when he was a boy. I take it that is somewhere during the days of the Depression because Dad would be somewhere close to being a teenager. He's born in 23. This is Grandmother Clark. This is our 3 children when they were very young. And she died before she almost came to 100, about 96 years old. Dad served in World War II. By the way, he was a conscientious objector. He didn't want to bear arms, but he did serve in World War II. He was in the Army. And this is his brother who was in the Navy. And this is, of course, our aunt. She's still alive. Both of those gentlemen right there are dead, but she's still alive. She lives in Clearwater, Florida. We call her Aunt Sis, but her name is Eva Jane Methvin. This is Mom and Dad, probably around 1960 or 70. I know that because that polyester coat he's got on. And I hope they burned that thing because I have no intention of wearing something like that. But they were married for 50 years. And this is Dad and Roy Deaver. Many of you probably remember Brother Deaver. The reason I put this picture here is because Dad was a friend of a great host of gospel preachers. And the reason Dad was a friend of gospel preachers is because Uncle Franklin was a friend of many gospel preachers. And they sort of intertwined. It was nothing to have gospel preachers at my mother's kitchen table for lunch. Dad would simply call, "What are you fixing for lunch? So-and-so's come by the office. We'll be there in 5 minutes." And Mom had 5 minutes to get whatever prepared extra for the man that was showing up. Men like Brother Guyan Woods, Batzel Barrick Baxter. G.K. Wallace was a household name in my family. Brother Gus Nichols. And I could just go on and on and on and on of men when I was a little boy walked right through the door and sat down at our dining room table to eat. I thought all that was corny to sit around there and look at preachers, talk about preacher stories. And not corny anymore. Not corny anymore at all to me. But this is Mom and Dad. This is in March 11th, 1997. I have right here in my hand the very plaque that he's got in his hands right there. That's what this plaque says. To Winford Clark, in grateful recognition, 51 years of gospel preacher, as a gospel preacher, dedicated service and training preachers, teachers, and leaders of the Bible, director of the instructor of the School of Bible Institute, a steadfast supporter and encouragement of Christian education, presented by the V.P. Black School of Biblical Studies of Fulton University, March 11, 1997. Dad was a graduate of Montgomery Bible College. That was before it was Alabama Christian. That was before Long Four was ever Fulton University, which it is now. And then he was a graduate of Alabama Christian School of Religion. Brother Rex Turner Sr. was the director of that school. That's where I got my master's, because of Brother Turner Sr. When I told my dad that I wanted to preach, Dad called Uncle Franklin. He asked Uncle Franklin, where should Jimmy go because he wants to preach? Uncle Franklin said, send him to Freed Hardeman. Tell him to take every class William Woodson teaches. I told Brother Woodson that many years ago. Here's what Brother Woodson told me. He said, that was a death wish. That's a quote. If you ever had William Woodson for a teacher, if you were ever a student in Brother William Woodson's classes, he would either make you or he would break you. He was the chairman of the Bible department here at Freed Hardeman from 1975 to 79 when I was here, and even longer. He actually went into David Lipscomb and worked in the graduate department. Brother William Woodson was one of my best friends all the way up to the time he died. He actually helped me in this class. He was one of the original teachers in the class my dad started in 1985. And he taught to the day he died in the school that we teach in indirect. Again, that's another household name of a man in our brotherhood. But this was 5 months to the day of my dad's death. He had cancer right there in that picture. He was very, very sick the day that picture was taken. I drove him to Montgomery because of that. This is his grave and my mother's grave in Talladega and Pine Hill Cemetery. And this is the tombstone marker. It simply says, gospel preacher, and beside mother. She died May 24, 1999. It says, help me. These are lessons I learned from my dad, and then this will be the end of this presentation. Actually, it should have been in 10 minutes ago, right? Is that you I see coming back? This is the statement my grandfather would tell my dad. My dad's dad would tell him this. My grandfather was a stickler about, when I send you to do something, you don't dally, you don't tarry, you get straight home. If I send you to the store with $5 to go get 5 pounds of flour, you go do that, you come straight home. You don't be lazy. If you ever knew my dad, he never walked slow. I used to joke that when he died, they'd have to cut his legs off because they'd still be going, because he was constantly in a fast walk, almost to a run. Another thing Dad would teach is, I would rather wear out than rust out. And he lived that to the day he died. As a matter of fact, when cancer got a hold of him, he told me, he says, take it from an old man, you can wear out before your time. Sometimes you need to slow down. He didn't live it, though he tried to teach it. All men have clay feet. I heard my dad say that time and time again. What does he mean by that? Never, ever, ever put your full trust in a preacher. I don't care who they are. And not a man in this room, not a man on this earth, ain't got flaws. Many, many gospel preachers in my lifetime I idolized. And I can tell you some things about some gospel preachers make your head spin. All men have clay feet. You put your faith in God, not in any man. Another thing Dad used to teach is, you cannot outgive the Lord. First thing you do when you get your paycheck is you put your contribution to the side. You give to God first, and the rest of it, you serve like the Lord wants you to serve. He says, but you never will outgive God. I've lived to see that. And our brotherhood needs to know that. Our brotherhood needs to live that. And our kids need to be taught that. Our grandkids need to be taught that. We live in a secular world, but this still world owned by God. And one day, he'll show the world he does own it. We live as though he does. And always respect the Bible. The Bible's always the word of God. You don't ever disrespect it. And humor always helps in time of stress. My daddy was one of the most nervous people when he stood up to preach to preachers. I'd be driving him along, and the next thing you know, he'd say something to the effect about being nervous. says one of the first things they'd do when he got in the pulpit was he'd tell a joke, just one. He says, and once the audience would laugh about it, he said, that settled me down, and then I could preach. And we would get in the car, he'd go, whew, now I can relax, and so can I. Thank you for your attention.
Jimmy, you've transported us into a thrilling coverage of this topic you were given. And you did it with such ease. Let's say thank you, everyone. Appreciate it. Let's take a 3 or 4 minute break, and I'd like the panelists to come up, all the friends, if you will. And if you've spoken, Jimmy, would you join us, please?